Scramble, wasn't it? 4 a.m. on Saturday morning, travellers entering the UK from France and the Netherlands. You had to face a 14-day quarantine. It hasn't stopped plenty of holidaymakers from travelling the other way and going to France regardless. And here in England, more restrictions were lifted, including indoor theatre, music, performance venues, soft play areas as well, wedding receptions in the form of a sit-down meal for up to 30 guests will be permitted. Now, casinos have opened bowling alleys, skating rings, and as we mentioned before, the soft play areas too can reopen. So just to talk a little more about this is Kevin Mortimer, a professor in respiratory medicine at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Kevin, thanks for being with us once again. Morning to you. Let's just start with the new quarantine rules, specifically France, the two-week quarantine on returning from France. Obviously, it's there for a reason. Is it precautionary, this, or is there more data that we just don't know about?
I think that's hard to know because we don't know. In these circumstances, we've just got to put our faith in the people who do have access to all of the data that might not be in the public domain, and that they're making the right calls to try and keep us safe.
It was all very, very last minute, this, wasn't it? I think it was announced on the Friday, or Thursday or the Friday, that 4 a.m. Saturday morning, that's it. If you don't get back into the UK by that time, we have people scrambling onto ferries, onto planes, some people making it by a matter of minutes. It was all very, very panicky.
Yes, and I guess that this is one thing. I mean, there's a lot of politics around at the moment, and I think that this overall topic of addressing the coronavirus pandemic has probably from the outset and increasingly become very, very political. And there are obviously lots of big issues that and big problems that people are facing in response to this. This is one of them. And I think that. Perhaps a little bit more time could be taken to give people a little bit more time to adjust to what are really very large changes to plans and can be incredibly disruptive to people who are just trying to make the most of opportunities as they open up, and then suddenly to find that they're taken away again at such short notice. It is very hard and perhaps not entirely justified to go quite so quickly with the decision-making one way and then the other.
And talking about opportunity as well, before it was announced that you had to be back in the UK by 4 a.m. on the Saturday, before that you could get a flight, you could get, you know, train travel, or you could get a ferry for 100 quid, 120 quid, and then it was £400, £500 and more in some cases as well. It's like a double whammy, this.
It's extraordinarily unfair, isn't it? And the economic consequences right across the board are going to be one of the enduring problems, I fear. Actually, particularly for the world's poor, but really for inequality everywhere. There are rich and poor in all countries, and I fear that the gap between them will be made all the greater for this. And a family taking the opportunity to take a holiday in the summer holidays, who's suddenly stung with those kinds of additional bills, that could be one hit too many for them.
There were one or two comments over the weekend as well that said, "Well, look, you know, if you go off on a holiday to the likes of France or Spain or Greece or whatever, you know, you have to bear in mind that at some point, at any point, may not happen, but at some point the government might say you need to be back tomorrow because we've just seen some latest figures and coronavirus is still very much with us. So you kind of pays your money, takes your choice."
Yes, I think you're right. At the same time, we're all trying to feel our way through all of this uncertainty and trying to make our own judgments about the risks and benefits of, for some people, it's the risks and benefits even of stepping outside of their front door for the first time, and for others, it's venturing further afield. So I guess that on the one hand, we have to take some responsibility for our own own decision making, but at the same time, we do need to be given a chance, eh?
Well, indeed, and it works on trust, this, Kevin, doesn't it? You know, you obey the rules, that's fine. I mean, some probably won't, you know, but that's just life. That's just the way things work. Let me just talk about these figures. At the end of last week, we saw that the number of registered deaths recorded in the UK, that was chopped by 5,000, which was a big surprise to a lot of people. What was behind that, Kevin?
Yes, well, I imagine lots of people will be looking at this with a little bit of suspicion and thinking, hang on a minute, are they not fudging the figures here? But what I think the reality is that this is trying to bring the count, the way in which deaths from coronavirus are counted in England, in line with the other in line with Northern Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. You know, many people would think, well, isn't it fairly obvious? You know, you're either alive or you're dead, and if you're dead, well, surely it's clear what you have died of. But it is actually quite difficult to get those definitions right, and especially with something that's really quite so new as this is. And of course, at the beginning, we didn't have the same level of robust testing that we have now. So what's happened is that now the headline reporting is deaths within 28 days of a positive swab. And that then allows these statistics to be compared across countries and then between countries around the world. Although there isn't actually a WHO, World Health Organization, standard yet.
Right. So from what you've said there, if somebody had contracted coronavirus, but then died of another illness, maybe a stroke or a heart attack, or, you know, they're hit by a bus, you know, heaven forbid, but that would still be, or it was still being counted as a coronavirus death.
Yes, that's a bit strange, isn't it? The reason why this would have been the case was at the very beginning, whilst there was a desperate scramble to get all of the data to properly understand how, if you like, the worst case scenario, which is certainly what these kind of figures would then be picking up, that this approach of capturing all deaths, whatever then happens after the positive diagnosis, would make sure that hopefully as few are missed as possible. But then you've got some scenarios like the one that you've described. You know, I get a positive test and the next week I'm run over by a bus. Well, that would be counted as a coronavirus death, which doesn't make much sense.
It doesn't make much sense. No, it doesn't. But even though we've had, let's just finish on local lockdowns. Even though we've had local lockdowns in certain places, Kevin, figures would suggest that the infection rate has remained relatively in check at the moment. I mean, it will kind of bubble up and bubble down, but it seems to be relatively in check. And surely this is good news.
Oh, it's fabulous news. And this, we see the effects of this at our local hospitals as well, where we see very few people now with COVID-19, which is a huge transformation from the situation some months ago, and extremely welcome.
And of course, we still need to be in our mettle, though. We still need to be aware and social distancing. It was funny, we had a conversation earlier on that if you went into a shop or a restaurant or for something to eat or whatever, and there were no restrictions in place, there was no hand gel, there was no one-way system, you know, you'd be a little bit upset. You'd probably ask for the manager and you would ask why these are not in place, you know, and that's a good move. That's a whole shift of a mindset now, isn't it?
Yes, and I think we certainly need to keep this up, because the last thing we want to do is to see any steps back in the other direction. And of course, whilst we're making the most of summer just at the moment, winter is around the corner, and so everything we can do right now to maximise our health for the winter to come the better. And that includes doing our bit to try and prevent any resurgence of coronavirus.
Kevin, as ever, thanks for your time this morning. Really appreciate it. And I think you gave us your crumb of comfort there when you said to us you see very, very few COVID patients now, which is a huge contrast to the early months. But thanks very much. And give everybody our best who you're working with. Thanks for everything they're doing. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks.
Cheers. Bye-bye. There he is, Kevin Mortimer. He's a good lad, Kevin, isn't he?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, to hear that is, there is something, some positive to hold on to there,
well,
isn't there?
I mean, they're always, in any story, there's always, but I think it's human nature, you know, isn't it, to go for worse, not for everybody, but a lot of people go for worse scenario all the time. And it has been bad. We know it's been bad, but it's just good to hear those, as we've called them, those little crumbs of comfort every week, and it just gives you a little bit of a boost.
It does. Yeah. We will get through this, you know, it's just a matter of time,
I wasn't happy with him mentioning winter, like, you know. But,
I know, but I mean, come on.
Winter's just around the corner. It might be in your world, Kev.
Still August here.
Come on, mate, 17th of August, Kevin. Calm down, mate, calm down. Speaking of which...